From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Brazil's new president, Jair Bolsonaro, inaugurated in the new year, began his tenure exactly as human rights and environmental activists feared he would, by issuing executive orders within hours of taking office aimed at indigenous groups, Afro-Brazilians descended from enslaved people, and the LGBTQ community. Like his counterpart in the United States, Bolsonaro enjoys making pronouncements over social media, using his Twitter account prolifically. The rabidly right-wing, pro-business, pro-gun, and pro-military president has worried critics who fear he will usher in a new era reminiscent of the dictatorship, the horrors of which are still fresh in the memories of many Brazilians. We go now to Brazil to speak with Ivo Herzog. He's a human rights activist based in Sao Paulo. He's also the president of the board of the Vladimir Herzog Institute, which is named after his father, a Brazilian journalist who was tortured and assassinated by the dictatorship. Welcome to the program, Ivo.
Thank you.
Let's start with focusing on what Mr. Bolsonaro did in his first day in office. Many worried about how he would in particular target indigenous communities and their land rights. Can you explain what he did with his executive order and how that might make things much more difficult for indigenous communities?
Well, basically, we used to have a branch of the government called FUNAI that was responsible to set the land, the marks for the land, the frontiers of the Indian people in Brazil. He reduced the power of that branch of the government. He transferred FUNAI to the Ministry of Agriculture. So there is a conflict of interest, right? Because people who want to do farming, they don't like very much Indians. They don't like very much lands that they can go and farm on. So, as you said, people are quite scared about what he's doing because we have a tradition of trying to protect our people, the Indians of Brazil, and now he really put all at risk.
So the agriculture minister, a woman named Teresa Cristina Correa da Costa Dias, what is her role? She, when she was announced as being the minister of agriculture, many were worried. What is her agenda as far as you can tell?
From what we know about her background, she's quite in line with farmers, you know, and farmers try to take the most of the land. They don't care about the protection of the environment. They don't care about trees. They want to put trees down. And the kind of farm that we have is for, we have to remove the forest, the rainforest that we have, to plant soybeans or to have, cows and bulls, you know, for meat. So as she has the tradition of supporting these farmers, and now she has the power to, you know, to help them to expand their properties towards areas of protection inside the Amazon rainforest.
Let's also talk about what Mr. Bolsonaro did in targeting the descendants of enslaved Brazilians. There is, of course, a history in Brazil, just as there is in the United States, of African peoples being brought over and an institution of slavery. And of course, today you have an Afro-Brazilian community descended from that. So what are protections that he has undone?
Well, basically, we used to have a very strong human rights secretary. It has the same status as the Secretary of Commerce or Secretary of Economy. And now it's under, it has reduced importance. The person who is ahead of the human rights secretary, Damaris Alves, she's very conservative. She is one of those very religious, So they don't have the same view. They don't understand the importance of diversity and how to protect that diversity. Some of the steps that Bolsonaro is trying to implement is, for example, quotas on the universities. They are against the quotas in university, and this is one of the
Do
things
you mean
that we are trying.
quotas in universe, racial
Quotas,
quotas, or?
yes, racial quotas, yes. So they, and that's something quite new in Brazil. That's something that came from in the last 10 years in Brazil. We didn't used to have quotas in Brazil. And that's a form of inclusion, right? Because most of the African American descendants here in Brazil, they are very poor. But there is things even more, how can I say, seriously. For example, Bolsonaro's agendas in terms of national security. He also inspired several state governors to use violence against crime, meaning if someone is maybe doing something wrong, you should shoot that person, you should kill that person. The governor of Rio already said a lot about that. If someone is carrying a gun and it's an illegal gun, the police has to shoot that person without asking any kind of question. That's the sort of ideology that Bolsonaro brings as at a national level.
Right, he's. I understand that he loosened gun control mechanisms among his first, some of his first actions in office as well. He's very pro-gun, and that's his way of dealing with rampant gun violence, is to basically allow more Brazilians to have access to more guns.
That's right, but more than that, he wants to give more protection to the police for them to be able to kill anyone. And one important information is that, for example, only in the state of São Paulo, the police in 2017 killed over 900 people. 70%, between 70 and 80% of these people are African American descendants. Most of them are young men. I used to be part of the council of the police ombudsman here in São Paulo as well. So we see that the policy of national security is against the poor people. And most of the poor people are African American descendants.
Let's also talk about what the impact of Bolsonaro's presidency is going to be on the military. I understand that he's also, in recent days, deployed troops to a part of Brazil that has had a spike in crime and violence.
Yes, that's in Fortaleza in the north of Brazil. But the thing on military about Bolsonaro is that he is a former military. Actually, he was expelled from the army because of discipline. Nevertheless, he always kept his contact with the army. And this government is the one that has more military people since the dictatorship in Brazil.
So right there is something very serious to worry about. Going back to what we discussed around indigenous communities and their land rights, and how there's been more power transferred to the agricultural ministry now, what are the implications for environmental concerns? Brazil is not only Latin America's largest country, it is also, of course, home to a majority of the Amazon rainforest, which is considered very critical for the global climate. What are the worries that environmentalists have in Brazil under Bolsonaro?
I think the best way for you to understand it is that his mentor or his inspirer is Donald Trump. So
Right.
what are your worries about Donald Trump on environmental issues? It's the same over here. He's very aligned with Donald Trump. He doesn't believe in global warming. It's terrible. And again, the rainforest that we have, the Amazon forest, is one of the most important ecosystem that helps to regulate the temperature in Earth. So every time that we put down one tree, we are really putting in jeopardy the whole planet. São Paulo, for example, we are just having, as we speak, a tropical storm here. We are having it's summer, that's why you have a tropical storm. But during winter, we are having in all Brazil, São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, Brasília, for example, Brasília last year had the lowest precipitation in its history. Why is that? Because all the humidity that we get in the south, southeast of Brazil comes from winds coming from the Amazon rainforest. So we don't have those forests. We don't bring water down here to São Paulo, Rio, Brasília, Minas. If you look the map of the world, in the same latitude that the southeast of Brazil is, if you go to other continents, those continents have deserts, like in Australia, in Africa. Why we don't have it? Because we have the Amazon rainforest bringing water from there over here. Nevertheless, this is changing very rapidly. We are losing that forest, and we are losing a lot of water. We are having serious problems of lack of water. Here in São Paulo, our houses in São Paulo, they cut the water during the night, and we have water during the day to try to preserve the water in the reservatories.
So I want to pick up on what you said about Bolsonaro's allegiance, or rather his similarity to Trump. Under Bolsonaro, what do U.S.-Brazil relations look like? I understand that Trump sent his national security advisor, John Bolton, to the inauguration and congratulated Bolsonaro, and that Bolsonaro has also showed a willingness to ally with the U.S. on major foreign policy issues, such as moving the Brazilian embassy to Jerusalem in Israel, you know, on the other side of the planet. So they seem to be pretty aligned.
Yes, very much indeed. The only mistake that he's doing is that he believes that Brazil has the same strength, the same power as the United States, and we do not have. So we can't have the same foreign policy that the United States has, because, you know, the other countries will run over us. But Bolsonaro doesn't have that understanding. He doesn't have that sort of understanding of the world. Actually, his knowledge is very limited about everything. And during the campaign, he refused to participate in the debates, in the presidential debates. In some few interviews, when the journalists were trying to get more information about him, he would say, "I don't know, ask my Secretary of Economy, Paulo Guedes." So it's very scary to have the leader of a nation the size of Brazil with someone that knows so little about our country and about the world.
So he was pretty open about his ignorance, which is also sort of a Trumpian trait.
Yes, and again, he used the same speech as Trump, saying that he's an outsider of the politics. Trump was an outsider, but Bolsonaro was not. He was in Congress for over 20 years. He did nothing in the Congress during his 27 years, if I'm not mistaken, time in the Congress. He only had two projects approved. But he was able to sell that idea that he was an outsider, that he was not part of these old politics that people are tired of. And that maybe was one of the strengths of his campaign. The other point that we have in common, but we are still trying to investigate, as you in the U.S. are also investigating, is the influence of Russia in our elections.
Everything,
really? Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so, definitely. So do you? Is there evidence that there was an attempt to use social media to polarize and sort of put out fake news to polarize the electorate?
The result of this election is due to social media, 100%. Everyone agrees with that.
Wow.
Different from the U.S., the main tool that was used in Brazil is WhatsApp.
WhatsApp is a peer-to-peer texting app that is very widely used and quite popular around the world. So people were basically sharing information through this that tilted the election in favor of Bolsonaro.
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, Brazil is the number one country in the world with WhatsApp users. But again, they were very efficient with that. They also use that Cambridge Analytica, to get information to use in the campaign.
So
If you
Bolsonaro's
look,
campaign hired Cambridge Analytica, the same firm that Trump's campaign hired, and the same firm that helped the Brexit folks win in Britain.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, he did. And the amount of fake news that was being around during the election was really scary. People lost the, how can I say, the what is true and what is not true, what is fake news. People lost the reference of truth. And so, and there is also a third element, maybe a bit different from the US, which is the church. Brazil has a large evangelic community. Bolsonaro is from that church. And they put a lot of money in the campaign of Bolsonaro. As you see, for example, the Minister of Human Rights here in Brazil, Damares, she's from this church. She's an evangelic. So,
and in fact, does the evangelical tilt within this new presidency also explain some of the attacks on LGBTQ communities?
Yes. Yes, because his campaign, again, as a deputy when he was in Congress, his speech was always against women, against LGBTs. I think once he said that he's proud about having three sons, but he had a moment of weakness and had a daughter.
Wow.
He said that. I mean, this is in video. You can watch him saying things like that. He would say that he rather have his son dead than having his son homosexual. That's not a unanimous thought on the evangelical church. We have areas of the evangelical church that are more left-wing. They support LGBTs. And the Vladimir Herzog Institute, for example, we have a major program nationwide where we work with this conservative church trying to empower the non-conservative groups inside those major groups. We have to give voice to them. We have to help them to be listened and try to have a dispute of values inside their own church.
Let's finally, Ivo, talk a little bit about your father. For those of us here in the United States unfamiliar with the legacy of your father, Vladimir Herzog, after whom the institute that you're the president of the board of is named, who was he? And what does your personal family history, how does that provide a backdrop for your fears under this new regime?
That's a very good question and very personal. Let's go. My father was a journalist. He immigrated from Yugoslavia during the Second World War. Most of his family was killed in concentration camps. My name, Ivo, is in honor of a cousin of my father who died during the Second World War. Again, he came to Brazil, became a Brazilian citizen. Was a journalist, he would work more with the subject of culture, you know, about cine, movies, music, expositions, things like that. And because of his early life experience and other things and what he learned in his with his family, he was 100% against any form of violence. He would believe that we have to use the dialogue, talking to other people to change things. So during the dictatorship, that's what he was trying to do. He was talking, he was producing TV shows, trying to show both sides, things like that. At the time of his death, he was the director of journalism of the public television here in Brazil, something like of São Paulo, actually, like PBS, but it's a TV that belongs to the government, to the military government in Brazil, even though they chose my father to be the chief of journalism. However, there was in 1975, there was a moment in 1974, just to understand, sorry, but it's hard not to give the context so things get loose. In 1974, we have an election for the Congress. And the opposition, the people that wanted the democracy back, won by far. So the government, the military government, tried to be harder on the social movements to try to preserve the supremacy as the executive power. So my father was couching this kind of cyclone. They were arresting people that were left wings that would have socialist thoughts. My father was a member of the Communist Party in Brazil. Because my father was Jew, he couldn't go to the Catholic group. He joined the Communist Party. And that's the reason that they tried to arrest my father on October 24th, but his co-workers were able to convince the agents of the government to let my father to go the following day, the October 25th, a Saturday, to give a to speak to the officials, give his statement. A statement. Yeah. So my father was never arrested. This is very important. He, by his own willing, went to the Doi Codi, the place of the secret police in São Paulo, to give his statement. And a few hours later, he was dead. He was assassinated. He was tortured, and eventually he died. People got very, the indignation of the Brazilian people was really huge. Because again, he was a teacher of the Universidade de São Paulo, the main Brazilian university. He was someone that didn't do anything wrong in his own life. He used to work with movies, a journalist, etc., etc. Students went on strikes. And on the seventh day of his birth, there was a major celebration in the main cathedral of São Paulo, a multi-religions celebration, Catholics, Jews, Protestants, that was on October 31st. And that's very important. I think that's the main point of my answer to your question. That day is considered the beginning of the path for democracy in Brazil and the beginning of the decline of the dictatorship in Brazil. On that day, the people said, it's done, dictatorship. We don't accept that anymore. We demand democracy. So that's the importance of my father. Wow. Then there's a second chapter about our family's fight for justice with the courts. We were not able to get justice in the Brazilian courts. And last year in July, the Human Rights American Organization's jury gave a sentence in the case of my father, and Brazil was charged of committing crimes against humanity. That was the first time in the history of Brazil that we were charged as criminals of that sort of crime. And that kind of crime cannot be forgiven, cannot be expired. So Brazil, the court demanded Brazil to investigate the responsibles for the death of my father.
Finally, in just the last minute of our conversation, do you fear, given what you're living under today, that there could be a return to those dark days?
Actually, I think it might be even worse, because on those dark days, the enemy was well known. We have a dictatorship put in place. The issue that we have now is that you have the same people with the same ideology. Nevertheless, they have the legitimacy of the vote. So people have more difficulty to understand what that represents against the society. Does it make sense?
Yes, so an elected dictatorship in the making rather than the traditional way in which dictatorships have come to power, which is by seizing political power. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Ivo. We will link to the organization's website, VladimirHerzog.org, that you're a part of from our website. Thank you so much and good luck to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My guest has been Ivo Herzog. He's a human rights activist based in Sao Paulo. He's the president of the board of the Vladimir Herzog Institute, named after his father, who was a Brazilian journalist tortured and assassinated by the dictatorship. We've been discussing Brazil's President Bolsonaro's first days in office. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.